Welcome to episode 295 of Fly Away. We're a group of agents from Outlander Travel who get together every week to talk about all things travel. Whether you've been listening for a while or just tuning in, we're happy you found us. We truly believe that travel has the power to change the world, and we want to inspire others to come along with us. We chat about destinations, current events, our favorite experiences, and lots more. We'd love to hear your feedback and ideas for topics, so be sure to connect with us on our website, Facebook, or Twitter. My name is George, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Elizabeth, Sandy, Lindsay, and Donna. Our social media is filled with bright, cheerful, sometimes heavily edited images of our lives. Pictures can capture a moment, preserve a memory, and help you convey the story of your adventure to loved ones back home. Today, we are going to explore some tips and tricks you can use to improve your vacation photography skills and help you bring home those Instagram-worthy shots using just your cell phone camera. So let's get started. So I'll start off and say that my iPhone camera is almost never used.
Yeah. Wow. You don't even have an iPhone, do you? I thought were Android.
No, hate Android.
Pro Max. So you have the Pro Max too, George?
I have the 11 Pro Max.
I have it too.
Really?
All four of your iPhone cameras are never used.
Out. You're an early adopter, huh, George?
Yeah, I can't say that I never use it. I use it a lot. I just
use it for your shopping list to go to the grocery store.
Yeah, or something I know I'm going to need to remember, so I take a picture of it. Yeah, but yeah, no, I would never use it on vacation as a serious camera for me.
So DSLR. I challenge you to use it on your next vacation. Not all the time, but you have to use it a little bit because it's a really good camera. I had literally had a conversation. So I know nothing about photography. I'm a horrible photographer. And I've started exploring this because I have to do something about my photography because it's so bad. And so I started taking an iPhone camera class because I started looking for a DSLR camera. And my sister, who knows me very well, better than anybody in this room, was like, I'm not sure you really want to carry that around because it's heavy and cumbersome and you travel a lot. And my sister also travels a lot and she loves photography. She's very talented with it. And she loves having the fancy camera and all the lenses and all that. And she said that she's actually on many trips just left the camera behind and used her. She has an 11 as well. And so the conversation went from, should I buy a DSLR to should I buy a DSLR or should I upgrade my 8 Plus to an 11 to get that extra camera?
Yeah. So that's kind of a little bit of my background with photography. At one point in time, I had $10,000 in Canon photography equipment and I was hauling it all over the world and it's a 50-pound bag. And then you got to worry about, is it going to get stolen? Where can I put it? Is it going to be safe?
Is it going to get broken?
Is it going to get dust in it? Because I'm in the desert. Is this, you know, all these things would. And then I was finding that when I was traveling, I was spending more time setting up my shots and more time worrying about my camera equipment and how to get the best picture than I was enjoying the experience I was having while I was traveling. And that was my point of okay, this has got to change. There is still a time and a place for that equipment. And I think there are some destinations you absolutely, if you have that equipment, you need to take it with you. But we have these amazing, my cameras on this, I have this 11 Pro Max too. These cameras are so much better than my first five cameras were. First five actual cameras.
Well, considering my first camera was a Polaroid.
I had a 110 with flash bulbs.
That's a low bar. Yep, I had that 220. Yeah, definitely.
And if you're going to take a picture that you're going to sell or you're going to blow up and you need the resolution and you need the clarity, then yes, take your good camera. If you're going to try and get wildlife pictures or anything like that, take your good camera. But if you're just trying to capture your adventure, you're trying to capture and tell the story of your travels and your journey, and you're going to do street photography and you're going to want to capture that moment as it happens, an iPhone, you're already going to, or any phone, an Android, Google, whatever you're using, you're going to have it with you anyway. They're lightweight, they're portable. You can get out and capture that shot that once in a lifetime shot that you wouldn't be able to get otherwise. So I am a big fan of using them. Should it be the only tool in your photography toolbox? If you want more professional looking photos, probably not. But for the purpose of this podcast, we're going to talk about all the little ways that you can make this camera on your phone into the perfect tool to capture all those travel memories and share with your family and friends back home. So,
well, I can say, cause I am a photographer as well. And I use my cell phone. I started using it for that exact same reason, for having to carry around all that heavy equipment and everything. And I was like, no, I just don't even want to mess with it. But I found that my phone, I have an Android phone, and it doesn't like Facebook. They don't really talk very well together. So I have to actually download all the pictures to my laptop, and then I can upload them into my Facebook page to get them up. I can post one picture here, one picture there, but I can't put them in an album. It's just one of the limitations of my camera or of my phone. But
I used to have Galaxies before I went to iPhone, and I never had that.
Or something, yeah, but they changed an algorithm or something, and it just doesn't work.
I have a Google Pixel 3, and I love the camera, but I don't have that issue at all. One of the things I love, love, love about this compared to when I had the iPhone is that there's unlimited storage. It's automatically uploaded to my Google account. So it's like, if I want to, like whenever we were on our trip to London, I could just go and put all those photos in a folder and just share it via Google, you know, with anybody I wanted to. It's very easy.
Well, it's sharing in iCloud as well. So, I mean, I think that they each have their, the pictures you take with your Google Pixel are really incredible. I will not argue that. I think that what I've learned about the iPhone, and hopefully Lindsay will talk about this a little bit too, is the lenses are different. You know, a lot of people, I think, buy the iPhone and think, oh yes, it's got this great camera. It's not that it has a great camera. It actually has two or three, if you have the iPhone 11, great cameras. So Lindsay, you want to talk about those lenses and sort of what they do?
So there's a wide angle lens that's actually an f1.8. And also I will say that all of these have the optical image stabilizer, which is incredible for a phone to have this. This is something that if you were to back in the day try and buy a camera, and you could spend a couple $100 and still not get that. So the 12 megapixel wide angle, there's also a 12 megapixel 2x telephoto lens. It's f2. And then there's a megapixel 12 megapixel f2.4. So that is an ultra wide, and that's like 120 degree view. So you get quite the view. And so you have a variety of options available to you. And this is where, just like any camera equipment, you have to know your equipment. Cause I have been that person who bought the nice shiny brand new camera the day before they left to go somewhere, and did not know one specific setting I was supposed to have. And guess what? My pictures were not as wonderful as they could have been. So just like, you should take some time, first of all, to get to know your phone camera. If this is what you're going to rely on for your travel pictures, get to know it. Use all the settings. Find out, do you have a grid setting? Do you have the daytime, nighttime settings? Do you, are you familiar with, if you have like these iPhones, if you have multiple lenses, do you know how to use burst mode? Can you set yourself timer? Can you use pano and practice with it? Make your cat or your dog really, really long, you know. play around with pano and get familiar with all of those settings on your phone, so that you are comfortable enough with it that when the opportunity arises to take that photo, you know where you need to go to set your phone up. Because I think that's one thing that was it is faster, but you have to really know what your equipment can do. And then most photographers will tell you, even professional photographers will tell you, it's not your equipment. It's how you are seeing what you were looking at, how you were trying to capture it. So, I mean, one of the best pictures I've ever taken was with a disposable. Do you remember the disposable cameras with the flash?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Disposable black and white camera with flash. One of the best pictures I've ever taken. And that was back in the day when you had to wait and find out. It was point and pray. Yeah. Wait, shoot, and pray, because you're waiting for it to come back. Now we have this luxury of where if you and I are looking at the same monument or the same building, we're each going to see it a different way. We can shoot that 50 different ways, more than 50 different ways. We can, you know, focus in on the windows or the texture of the doors or get that long view or get the, you know, and don't be afraid to change your positioning when you're looking at something to view it from a different angle, because it's going to look so much different. I know everybody has that tendency. You see all these pictures on Instagram, you see the same place, you want to get the same shot. Well, how boring is that to look at the same shot from every single person? So don't be afraid to put your personality into it and do something different. And part of that is being not being afraid to play around, because you can delete. So before you even go out, actually deleting reminded me that delete or move all of your photos that you no longer need on your phone before you travel. The last thing you want to be doing the first day in a new country or somewhere is, oh, I don't have any space left on my phone to take any pictures. So setting that up kind of beforehand, and then getting a good travel tripod, like a lightweight George. Do you have a travel tripod? You probably don't have one for your phone, but
you have not for my phone, but I do have a carbon fiber one for my DSLR. So to try to cut down as much weight as I possibly can.
Yeah. And that was the thing that I learned in this iPhone class first was I'm going to have a tripod anyway. I think when you have your phone, you think, oh, I don't have to have a tripod. No, you do actually. Mm-hmm. Like one of those key things, even with the stabilizers and everything else, you have to hold it very, very still. And a tripod is usually the best way to do that.
I remember when Lindsay and I were doing the trip to Fairbanks and we were doing the Aurora Borealis viewing. Mm-hmm. The first place we went to, this was the coolest thing because they set up your camera and they gave you a tripod. But that guy was very particularly offended by people trying to take pictures of the Northern Lights with their cell phones. And then there was another guy that was like one of the other nights that we didn't actually go to, where they would talk to you about like the apps you could download that would help you get that picture of the Northern Lights. Because apparently you have to set your aperture or whatever. And yeah, so it's kind of funny how different people look at that kind of thing. And there are some kind of snobs about it, I guess. But
George, I think she's talking to you.
Yeah, I know. Called out, right? It really depends on what you are trying to do with your pictures. If you are trying to make that, I take pictures of a bunch of stuff I probably should never take pictures of. I take pictures of everything from the start of my journey to throughout the trip and then the journey back. And then I go back and delete the things that weren't as important. The worst thing in the world is regretting a picture you never took. Oh, I meant to do this. So when you're looking at your trip and you're looking at where you're going, planning is so important. Planning and doing your research and finding out, okay, these are the iconic shots I can't not come home with. This is what I want to do. And then really kind of scheduling it out. And then trying to time it, because the universe has given us 2 beautiful hours every day called golden hours, where the earth really helps us out with our lighting, the hour after sunrise and the hour before sunset. And those are, the lighting is soft and it's wonderful. And it doesn't matter what you're shooting with. Everybody who takes pictures wants to shoot during that time. Then there's also the worst time of the day to take pictures, which is high noon.
Well, actually, you know, most people
don't know, I never really thought about
most
that.
Most people don't realize this, but when it's overcast, that's another great time because you don't have harsh shadows.
Overcast or even blue hour, which is the hour after sunset where the sky is still blue, but the city lights come on. And I did this in Anchorage. I did a photography tour and they took us out and we shot the skyline at night. Mm-hmm. And it was the coolest thing. And actually the best pictures I got out of there, I did use my camera and my cell phone. I got some great pictures with my cell phone of that. So there is something to be said about timing, making your timing, scouting out the area you want to shoot, making sure you're not going to miss those.
That's a really good point. I never really thought about that, but like, yeah, those sunset photos and stuff are always the ones that turn out.
Well, but then a sunset, an actual sunset, like taking a picture of a sunset is actually kind of tricky, like looking into the sun. Yeah. Well, so the lighting is great, but if you're actually trying to capture the sun, that's different.
And here's where having some expectations helps you, because will my camera be able to get me that amazing landscape shot that George's DSLR can get? No, probably not. However, I can make it look good and I can put a person in it and have a focal point and turn that into a great photo. Don't, a lot of people have a tendency to, I'm going to wait till everybody's out of the shot before I take this picture. And then we all go home, and I'm guilty of this too, with pictures where there's nobody in the picture and it's just that one iconic image. And is, you know, I've done so many photography classes over the years and still I struggle with the rule of thirds. I'm sure this is probably day one in your photography class, Elizabeth. The rule of thirds?
No, because he actually talks about all the mechanics first.
Okay.
It's probably in a later lesson because he talks about composition soon. Yeah.
These are the rules regarding how you frame the image so that it is pleasing to look at, is pleasing for your eye. And this basically means if you are looking at a picture, imagine it being cut into thirds both ways so that you have nine little boxes in your picture. It's called a grid. And some cameras on some phones and cameras will have this setting, grid setting. So if you know how to use it, it can do it for you. And then your job is to make sure that you are putting what you're trying to shoot in the proper box to make it pleasing. You don't want to cut anything straight in half. It's really boring. People have a tendency to do that where they put the horizon right in the center of the picture, or they put whatever they're shooting right in the center. You really don't want to do that. You want to make it the lower, you know, you want to put it in a different quadrant and give it some focal point, give the picture some depth. You want to make sure if you're shooting horizon, you want it to be perfectly straight. You want it on the bottom third or the top third. You want to do it differently. You don't want to be that traditional straight cut dissected right in the middle photo, because it's just not going to turn out as pleasing. So the grid feature is a great cheat for that, and that is in a lot of phones.
Yep. You have to turn it on though, or turn it off.
Check my phone. See if I have
it. I was amazed. I had no idea. And honestly, the things that your phone can do when you dig through all these features are amazing. Like the long-term exposure, and even like the, I think it's the boomerang feature on an iPhone, which is actually called bounce. Is that what it's called? I can't remember now, but that can create long exposure. That can create long exposure, photos. So it simulates the idea of long exposure when it isn't really. So a waterfall becomes very glassy and smooth as opposed to, you know, individual droplets of water, things like that.
And then, you know, talked about not cropping people out. But if you're going to a destination and you know you want to take pictures of local people, you need to open up that dialogue with them, because different cultures view taking pictures of people differently, and it's not always acceptable or kind to do so. Sometimes it's very insulting to do that. So you need to ask people before you take pictures of them, and don't just go up to somebody and ask. You need to have a conversation, make a genuine effort to know the person you're trying to shoot, you know, in keeping picture, having people in your pictures. I want to just make that disclaimer, so you don't think I'm going to just take all these pictures of these random people without their permission.
Unless you're doing it surreptitiously.
Yeah. Do you guys?
I'm curious, George, is there something about the DSLR camera that you don't feel the phone camera does the same thing? Like, what's the reason why you carry the heavy equipment versus using the?
Well, the first big thing for me is I shoot raw. So if you're not familiar with that, it's anytime your camera shoots JPEG, it's already applying compression and pixelation to the image. Most people don't want that. So with most DSLRs, you can shoot in raw mode, which is just a capture right off the sensor. Nothing's been done to it. The disadvantage is the file sizes tend to be quite a bit larger.
Yeah.
Now, most phones don't do it, but actually, just as we were starting this, I Googled, and apparently there are some iPhone apps that I can download that will let the 11 Pro Max shoot in RAW, which is great. So I may download one of those and try and see what kind of quality I get out of it.
Yay! We've converted him.
I wouldn't go that far.
The other thing that we should note is that shooting with your phone takes a lot of battery, can take up a lot of battery, especially if you're doing video, anything like that. So having an extra battery pack and remembering to put your phone, especially if you're in an area where you're struggling for service, to put it in airplane mode is a really good tip, because it'll cut down on the amount of battery your phone is sucking out to try and take those shots.
Well, I also find that with the battery issue, but also if you're doing like an action type shot, the SLR camera does such a much better job with any kind of movement.
Yeah.
If you're trying to do that, then your phone does. If it's a still shot, you can do great shots. And then also with they may have a macro lens that attachment or app that you can add onto your phone. But with most cameras, all you gotta do is change the lens and you have macro lens.
So here's where I cheat a little with the iPhone when I do that. If I'm trying to capture like Lily Bell when she's being crazy and jumping or running, I will shoot video and take pictures from video.
And the burst mode can work really well for that as well, which was something I learned from this iPhone video photography class. The burst mode was something that I have never used it except by accident a couple of times. I'm like, why do I have 40 pictures? Yeah. what just happened? Where I just accidentally, but the burst mode is amazing for like sports photography or anything like that. So it's not. I think the DSLRs, and again, as a non-photographer, I don't know this for sure, but you have a little bit more control in that case, but it's sort of doing the same thing where you just have a fast shutter release, and you're going to have a bunch of trash pictures and you're going to have a few like amazing action shots in the middle of that. And that's the other thing that I wasn't doing was I wasn't looking at my photos afterwards.
The HDR setting on my phone, I didn't know what that did. And that's that sort of high resolution. Yeah. Where it's using both lenses at the same time. And so I would go on this trip and I'd be like, why do I have two pictures of everything? And I couldn't figure it out. But then when you look really closely at the pictures, there's a difference. And so going through and, I mean, using that setting, it was, I mean, there are times, one of the biggest things it does is it defines clouds. So if you have a lot of light, it will break down that light and it will define things in the background that you couldn't normally see. So in your normal iPhone photo, you might have a washed out sky. But if you have the HDR setting on, you'll have cloud, cloud, cloud. Like you can actually see the definition on the trees, the leaves of the trees and everything. It takes a lot more memory to keep those. So it's great to go back through. And if you have that setting on, if you're in a situation where you need that, or you think your lighting is kind of funky, turn it on. It keeps both pictures and then decide which one is better and which one you need to keep. And that's what I'm doing now, is going back through. I'm back to 2016 now. I've been working backwards in time, and I will eventually get to like 2012, I think, when I first got my iPhone and get to where I've edited things out. But I still have pictures of the ground, you know, where you accidentally take that picture of the ground. It is so important to go back to your pictures when you get back and go through them.
Yes, in a timely manner. Because I'm still guilty of this. I have pictures I haven't dealt with from 2003.
Yep.
Still, you just reminded me of a really good point in photography is, and it doesn't matter if you're, you know, especially I think for cell phones, this is important, because, you know, you're using it for the benefit of speed. But if you have patience in your photography, you can sometimes get that shot to line up perfect. The clouds might move 15 minutes from now. The sky might look 15 minutes from now, 20 minutes from now, this area might look different. Oh, I took a picture of this yesterday and it was kind of overcast, but today it's beautiful. I want to go back and redo that shot. So really having that thought of planning, and then also having the patience to get the items that are important to you off your list will go a long way. And I know George can attest to this. I mean, photography is 90% patience.
Sitting there waiting for the monorail.
Well, and I think for me, as a non-photographer, one of my big things is I always want, I am very big on being in the moment. I'm very big on presence and enjoying things and mindfulness and making sure I'm there. And so taking pictures sometimes can detract from that. And there was a period in my life where my husband took all the pictures. I didn't take any pictures because I didn't want to be bothered by, you know, in not memorizing that moment. And then I realized I was actually missing out by not taking pictures. So I think there's a fine line. And one of the great things that a mobile phone will do is freeze you from the, I'm a photographer and I have the lenses and the cameras and the, and I will tell you, when I was in Africa, I had the lightest load of anybody else there, but I have the crappiest pictures. You know, that was a time where a phone probably wasn't the best choice. But then when I go to Walt Disney World and I just have my phone and my friend's got the DSLR camera and is waiting for the monorail on the tripod, and then, yeah, I'm the winner. So now, I assure you, yeah, exactly. And I assure you, George's photos of the fireworks are way better than my photos of the fireworks, but I had a lot more fun. But
that could be.
It should be. You know, there's a place for everything. I think there's a place for all of them. I think I was doing it wrong in the beginning when I was discounting my cell phone as, and I, that was back when I was an Android user. My phone was, my camera was incredible. It's like completely discounting the use of that. I mean, for, there is nothing better than an Android phone camera for not, for low light shooting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will put that up against all of my cameras. I have three cameras besides my phones. And I,
that has three cameras.
Yeah, that has four cameras, actually. if you, you know, it's hilarious that it has four cameras on it and George is using none of them.
Yes.
They really have, Apple's really up their game though with this plastic.
Yeah,
they have.
They have, yeah.
George, isn't it the same lens that the, didn't they buy the same lens that Android was using? Didn't they do something?
I don't know. I've never paid attention to the Android, so I couldn't.
I think the key feature is that the zoom lenses, because obviously if you zoom with a cell phone camera, you're doing a digital zoom. I say, obviously, I didn't know that. I just learned that. I didn't know why all my pictures were crappy, but that's why it is. And so with a DSLR camera, you're using a zoom lens and you're actually focusing the lens. And so the difference then is that your, the iPhone has those different focus levels so that you have these different lenses already built in. So you're not switching out your lenses. You just are using those different lenses. So I think, I mean, the verdict that I've come to with help from advisors is that the phone is good in situations where you don't want to be weighed down. Mm-hmm. You're going to go on a hike and you're going to, you know, you're going to carry your bare essentials with you and you're going to be on a 6-hour hike because you're traveling with Sandy and she does stupid things like that, then you want your phone. You don't want to carry your camera with you. But if you're going to Africa and you're going on safari, take your camera. Or you need your actual camera. Or you're going to Alaska. Or, yeah. Or
wildlife pictures.
Or to Yellowstone. I mean, if you're hiking in Yellowstone, take your camera. But if you're like driving through Yellowstone or if you're camping or whatever, make sure you have your camera with you and not your phone. Cause that, well, you can have your phone too, but, I think that they do have a place for either. And incidentally, we joked about the fireworks earlier, but I have some great pictures of fireworks with Marcus looking at the fireworks. They're not the best fireworks pictures, but they're good pictures of the fireworks with my kid in them that I took with my phone. So depending on if you want like those bursts of color and all that, then you have to have the tripod and the camera and the 1 hour patience, not to mention kicking people out of the way because they're standing in front of your camera. But
what I found was a good compromise for me was my Fuji XM1. Was having, because I wanted to be able to have some of the features of a DSLR, but still have some of the portability. So if you're going to a place that's kind of in between where you're thinking, you know, that's what I took to Cuba was that one, that and my cell phone. And I was really happy with that decision to not carry 50 pounds of equipment with me, but yet to then not only take my, just my cell phone, because I knew the odds of me coming back were going to be slim to none. So I really wanted to make the most of that opportunity. So. But there are so many good resources out there. There are web classes you can take if you want to get to brush up on your phone camera skills. You can take some classes. There are a bunch of tips out there. You can get a lot off of Instagram. You can get a lot of inspiration for shots, even for lining up shots and looking at different viewpoints from Pinterest and all of these other places. And the biggest tip I can give anybody is don't be afraid to change your physical position when you are. I cannot tell you, if I had a dollar for every time I offered to take somebody's pictures at Disney and then went down on one knee and they went, oh my God, this turned out so good. We never thought to do that. You know, change your viewpoint and you're going to get a completely, it's perspective is everything in photography. So change your.
Yeah, I did that in DC. I took a picture. I was under the Martin Luther King monument and I actually took a picture of him basically up his nose.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, it was, everybody else was just kind of standing around and I basically got down on my back and took a picture from above, from below.
Yeah, we all grew up with bad photographers. My parents, everybody's parents were like everybody in the center of the photo, right in front of this one thing that we're all going to look at. So be different. Don't be afraid to be different. Don't be afraid to experiment. What a world, what a blessing it is. We live in a world where we have digital photography available, because back in the day you had to pay so much money for film. It cost so much to get developed, and by the time you're waiting and you don't know if that picture turned out. Now we can just take a million shots and just delete the ones out that you don't agree with or didn't like. And then if you got some crappy shots from like your Africa trip that are cell phone, don't write them off completely. Go get one of those editing apps. I've seen
well, and the other thing is this is one of the biggies when I was taking photography classes. Bring the people in. If you're doing if people want a selfie kind of picture, actually like have them kind of fill the frame.
Mm-hmm.
So either you can kind of see the background, but it's not about the background. It's about the subject.
We do that every time we go to Disney. We take epic selfies and it's so funny. I laugh about them. It's everybody that I'm with in the selfie. And so there's no room. So literally no one would ever know where we are, but I always know we're at Disney because that's where we do the epic selfies. So it's great. And we all have our Disney faces on and usually somebody's wearing a Mickey hat or whatever. You could tell, but there's no castle in the background. We're just basically trying to get everybody in the picture with one long arm because you can't have a selfie stick at Walt Disney World. So, and I love those pictures. And one of the best pictures that I actually have it blown up on my wall was taken with a 220 film, black and white when I was in Greece, and my friend took the picture and she thought she was just getting the buildings in Santorini, but I'm actually standing to the left of the picture with my sunglasses on, just looking at her.
Yep.
And I wasn't even supposed to be in the picture. Like I didn't
I think know I was what in the picture panel. You're talking about. I thought yes. That was totally awesome.
It's a great picture.
Because whether or not she realized that she was utilizing the rule of thirds.
Yep, exactly.
In the left of the photo and not the center. If you'd been in the dead center, you wouldn't, that picture would be completely.
Yep. And it does. It looks totally posed.
I think, too, it bears repeating what you said earlier, Lindsay, about the photography class you took when you were in Anchorage. Because when you go to a place like that, there's usually an opportunity to take some kind of class that'll teach you some tricks for your cell phone or, you know, getting the frame just right or whatever. And you can pick up some really good tips afternoon, you know?
And familiarize yourself with the location. So the first day in a location, if you do a walking photography tour, okay, well, you're going to see the city or you're going to see wherever you are. They're going to drive you around in the van to all these spots. They're going to show you how to use your equipment. They're going to help you set your equipment up for the settings that you want. I was a greedy little bird. So if I'd wanted to, I had three cameras with me on that trip. I could have like had them set up all three. I didn't need them to, but there were people that were having them set up their cameras and help them go through the different settings. And that is, utilize those trips. They don't cost very much. I think like $60, $50, $60 was the one that I took. They're, you know, some of them are maybe $100 depending on where you're going. It's a really great investment because now you've got the layout. Now you are familiar, and photography is a constant learning thing. Like I haven't touched my Canon camera in years. So if I go pick that up again, I'm going to have to relearn so many things because the skills, if you don't constantly use them, you forget things or you lose them. So even if you might have at home familiarized yourself with something, doing one of those tours, like Sandy said, is that's that's the best way to kind of ensure that you're at least going to come home with something you want to hang on the wall.
Okay, well, that's our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. We would love for you to share your life-changing travel moments with us on our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook as Fly Away or from the podcast page on OutlanderTravel.com. Please be sure to subscribe to us and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. On behalf of Donna, Sandy, Elizabeth, Lindsay, and myself, George, thanks for joining us this week. Gotta fly.